Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
Running the Point with Jason Carey on the ATL Podcast Network, the intelligent podcast. Welcome to Running the Point with Jason Carey, man. Excited to be here. The people I have on my show are people that I respect. And people that I think have strong opinions and can have an intelligent conversation. So being on this show is no coincidence, number one. Number two, it's somebody, like I said, somebody I respect. So I started something recently where I don't introduce the person, my guest, because I could introduce you one way.
Right.
But and people introduce me all sorts of ways, and I'd be like, "That's not
coming
me.
To the stage."
So, man, I highly respected, a star in my eyes, here with me now.
Hopefully, in other people's eyes,
yeah,
too.
Definitely. My man, Rodney Perry's in
what
the building.
What up, dog? Young Jay,
what's going on?
Taking the dark skin tradition to the next level.
You already know,
because you know we got a lot of nice little biracials taking it to another level. You know, it's good to see the young fellas doing it.
Dark skin brothers, dark skin power.
Hey, I was super proud of you on the cruise, man. I mean, to me, you was the face of the cruise this year.
Word,
you know, talking about the Tom Joyner Fantastic Voyage, man, and you do some great work with Playdate and those guys, man. You guys are kind of the heartbeat of the cruise on so many levels.
Wow,
and
wow.
Y'all keep the energy going. And I this year, I don't know if I felt y'all presence as much as years before.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a reference point, you know.
Yeah.
But I wasn't out like I normally was.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why.
You catch Rodney chilling. He'd be at a table playing cards, dominoes, chilling.
I love the people.
Yeah.
You know, I love the people. Yeah.
Which is dope to me about you, man. You are definitely a man of the people. Rodney, yeah. You sit down with anybody and just kind of just kick it, man. It's like they knew you forever.
The worst thing you can be as a comedian is famous.
Mm.
The moment you get to a place where you can't sit with real people,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can't watch people then because people watching you.
Yep.
So I work very hard to stay normal.
Wow. Okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's some of my contemporaries who are deliberate celebrities. They go out of their way to exclude themselves from, and don't get me wrong, that works for some people. But for me personally, it don't work. I love the people, man.
No doubt. Does that help with the material? Just being with the people, does that help you kind of get material?
Absolutely. It definitely, I mean, I'm not, you know, people are like, I don't want to say nothing around you because you're a comedian. I don't want to get you to say something. First, you know what you had to do to end up in my act? You got to do a lot.
Yeah.
You got to be a part of my
good.
Life.
Yeah.
You know, and even my own litmus test, if I say a joke that I think is funny and I do it in front of people and they don't get what I think it should get,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to stop doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I might give it two shots.
I say, I'm going to deliver it different than that.
I try. Like, I got this premise I've been working on for a while. And one of my buddies, he's like, that's gold, dog. I've done it a couple of times and it never give me nothing. And I'm sure it's me. The premise is basically this: is people that are I can see that, mm-hmm. you know. So let's say, for instance, like, hey man, I heard, you know, Willie, man, he just came out of the closet. Get out of here! Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. he hit on me 12 years ago at a barbecue, you know. So that's kind of the premise of it. But it's so many people that fall into that category. You ain't really surprised if something come out about them.
Man, I know some people like that.
Everybody know I can see that.
It's real talk.
Yeah.
So listen. So what are we talking about today?
The
title or the conversation here is perseverance can be taught.
Oh wow. Okay.
Perseverance can be taught. So your point of view on that, I'll get into this a little bit. You know, the general belief for some people is either you got it or you don't.
Okay.
But I'm saying that perseverance possibly is something you could teach somebody. You can teach them to overcome. You can teach them to be strong. me personally, just to tell my own story, this journey that you guys, that people get to see me in now, I didn't start here, you know, like with anybody else.
Exactly.
I came from corporate America. I got an engineering degree. I was an engineer, and but I knew I was doing, like, I was on MTV on the weekend, so it's like, this is whack. I'm going back to work on Monday.
Right.
I got to go for it, you know, and see if it works. If it works, cool. If it doesn't, maybe not, you know, and so, but through that journey, I prepared myself mentally for the struggle, for me to end up homeless, which happened, for me to lose friends, to lose stuff, which all that happened.
Right.
But I prepared myself for that. Let's talk a little bit about you. A lot of people don't know. I just go get, give the premise. Where are you from, man?
From Chicago originally. Wow. Grew up in Monroe, Louisiana. I spent most of my formative years, my early childhood, in Chicago. My junior year of high school, we left and moved to my mother's hometown, which is Monroe, Louisiana.
That's talk about a difference.
That was a culture shock. And, you know, early, late high school, you know, getting to the sex game, started making babies really early. My oldest daughter is 28 years old now. You know, me and her mom didn't make it. Fast forward a bit, joined the Navy to take care of my child that I had in the world. Joined the Navy and start kind of traveling around the country and kind of learning more about myself. The underbelly of me always was comedy, though. I always wanted to be a comedian. The thing that affects all of us early on is sometimes you just don't know how to do it. You know,
true.
There's a learning curve for everything. And so I didn't know how to go about it. And I was able to kind of figure it out over time. And I mean, this is the Cliff Note version, but, you know, the rest is kind of history, you know.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, now, you are on Monique's show.
Yeah.
How did you get connected with Monique? How did that even happen?
Well, the comedy community is very small. Whether you know people or not, you kind of know of people. And so, Monique had become a fan of mine through an assistant that she had. I didn't even know this girl. But she was like, we got to go see this Rodney Perry. So they came out to the Comedy Store in L.A. I was doing a set. And unbeknownst to me, she was in the audience. I get a call maybe a few days later out of the blue. It's Monique. Hey, sugar. I'm like, who is this? She said, it's Monique. I'm like, Monique who? She said, Monique. I'm like, yo. Monique is calling me. I'm in the back of my little three-bedroom apartment, Inglewood, California, playing Madden, you know. And I'm really not trying to be bothered because I'm losing. So we talked, and she was like, man, I love your comedy. And what grabbed her and what still grabs her when she's evaluating funny people is she like people that talk about real stuff. And so I was talking about my wife, my kids, my family. She's like, I love your comedy. She said, don't take this the wrong way. Can I take your wife on a shopping spree? So she had been kind of doing that for people that she didn't know. And I was the first person she did that she kind of knew. Long story short, she took my wife out maybe a couple of days later. Her assistant took my wife to Costco and spent upwards of like $3,000 in a home, which was her generosity floored me. You know, because I'm living in L.A. I'm a little jaded. I'm seeing Hollywood, you know, from, you know, my young comics perspective. And to have somebody stop that you recognize as a star and for them to take notice of you is dope. And so I asked her afterwards, I'm like, how do I pay you back? And she said, you don't pay me back. She said, someday you'll bless some young comic the way I'm blessing you. And that was our intro to each other. And we began to work together on and off over a period of years. And that was the beginning. We did radio together. Monique and I did radio before we did television.
Okay. Didn't know
so,
that.
And so my backstory, I did radio in L.A. for 3 years on KJLH, which is Stevie Wonder's station.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
So it started off, I was doing a, there's a comedy club in L.A. called the Comedy Union, Black Owned Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. I had Friday nights at the Comedy Union. Mm-hmm. And so my experience at KJLH started going in to advertise my Friday night. Mm-hmm. So I was advertising Friday night. And then they would say, hey, man, why don't you come in on a Monday sometime? So I come in on a Monday. Monday became Tuesday. Tuesday became Wednesday. I look up. It's 3 years later.
Yeah.
No check.
Wow.
I'm on the morning show in the number two market in the world. I'm pictured. I still got pictures. I got pictures with Rodney Perry, KJLH, and the home team in the morning. Cliff Winston and the home team, Rodney Perry. I'm the comedy.
On the show.
On the show, not getting no check. The hardest part would be every 2 weeks when they get their check, and I'll have to sit there like I didn't notice. You know, it's crazy.
That everybody's getting a check.
But in retrospect, that's just paying your dues. Right. You will spend some part of your journey in service of someone else.
I hosted Playdate for years for free.
Gary, but because of that, I know you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that was the thing. So I'm doing KJLH, which is significant because when Monique called me, I got a call from her producer. Come in, sit in with Mo. This is, I'll tell you when the time was. We were about to elect Barack Obama for the first time. Oh. And so it was the days leading up to the election. They was doing voter registration drives, and Mo and them had one. Said, Rodney, come out, along with other comics. I wasn't the only comics. I think Joe Torre, Guy Torre was there. Mm-hmm. It was a bunch of, you know, the people that were doing stuff in and around L.A.
Yeah.
And so I got invited out to that, and Mo and I had this great chemistry off the jump. We just had this great chemistry on the air. We was laughing and talking. I was comfortable enough in my own skin not to try to do too much. Mm-hmm. And that was her experience with other comics. So they like me. So I get a call. I think election day is Tuesday. I get a call to come in with her the day after the election. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know, it's cool. But at the same time, I'm kind of wary of it because I just did 3 years of radio for free.
Yeah.
And every relationship start with a hello. Every horrible relationship start with one day. Yeah. If you could look away from that girl that broke your heart, you wouldn't even speak to her.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is that. So I'm tripping. I'm kind of going through it in my mind. And I talked to my wife. I was like, babe, I don't know about this. She's like, the lady that took me on a shopping spree would not have you work for one day for free, let alone 3 years. Mm. My wife is always the realest voice in my life. Mm-hmm. So I went in Wednesday night, Wednesday afternoon, good show. Hey, Rod, man, great show day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Wait.
See you tomorrow. I'm still in my head, though. I'm like, yo, okay, day two of 3 years again. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'm going through that in my mind, boom, boom, boom. All right, see y'all tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So then Friday comes. So we start on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday come. End of Thursday, hey, Rod, hey, man, great show, man. We'll see you tomorrow, man. Dog, you doing great. Mo, love you. We love you. See you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Shit.
Almost a week in this bush.
A full week, nothing. Nobody even talk about no money, nothing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I ain't really tripping, man. It's so dope that it really don't matter. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the show on Friday, Sidney Hicks, Monique's husband, he pulled me to the side. Now, I don't know if you've ever been pulled to the side, but I'm thinking I'm about to get fired. Mm-hmm. How you get fired and you ain't got a job, Craig? So
you about to get fired.
I'm about to get fired. Nothing. You ain't got no job. You got nothing, Craig. How you gonna get fired on a day off? Uh-huh. So I'm thinking that's about to go down. He said, man, hey, man, we love you. Man, we love you on the air. You sound great. I mean, we want you to join our team. And I'm like, yeah. He said, hold on, man. Before you answer, man, I got to be honest. We don't have, I mean, we only can do like a six-figure salary.
What?
Who are you talking to, brother?
What?
When I tell you, that was so validating. It was 3 years of free for that moment. Mm. And that moment, it was surreal for me. I cried. It was crazy. So yeah. So I'm going through it. I say yes, of course. And then life happens. I mean, for every upswing, you know, life is like a pendulum. So it's going back and forth. So I got the upswing. 5 months later, the show is over.
Mm.
So Monique looked at me. The show is over. She said, writing bigger and better things are coming. Now, she had already done Precious. So mm-hmm. she knew that was in the can.
Mm-hmm.
They already had a deal for the TV show, unbeknownst to me.
Mm.
Well, they was working out.
Precious was already out. It hadn't been out.
No,
yet.
It hasn't been out yet. She had done it. She had done it.
So she knew that was in the clip.
She knew that was in the clip. Mm-hmm. And the deal with BET was coming to its finalization. Bigger and better things are coming. That's what she told me.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people can't really talk about this lady to me, mm-hmm. first of all. So I get a call. It's summer. That's summer, spring. Hey, Rodney, I just made the biggest deal in BET history. I want you to roll with me. We got to holler at you. Hey, I'm going to call you back. Can't talk. Click.
That's Monique calling.
That's Monique.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, yo, why she hang up on me like that? Damn.
She tease you, too. Just dangle something in your face.
About a week later, I get another call. Sydney. Hey, Rod. Yo, it's on, baby. BET about to hit you up. It's on and cracking. Hopefully, you ready, man. It's going to be great. Hey, the Monique Show. I hope you're ready for this. Roddy Perry, we about to do this. I got to go. Bye. Click.
Bam. What is going on?
What the hell is going on? So I get a next call I get is from BET. I'm living in L.A., Inglewood, California. Hey, Rodney Perry, this is so-and-so, executive over at BET, man. We're excited. Monique wants you to work with us on this show. And, wow, are you willing to relocate? Hell yeah.
Yep.
Yes. And you know, I learned in my journey, don't never be wishy-washy. Give people solid answers, yes or no. If you wishy-washy, you can end up not getting nothing.
I need a jewel bell. Every time somebody drop a jewel, I'm ding.
Yeah. So I said yes. It's like, yeah, well, here's some of the particulars. I mean, we'll send you over the deal, but long story short, we want you to relocate it. We will not be covering any whatever it takes. You got to get yourself there. This will be your pay. You get this, you get that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, now I'm ex-military. I know when you ask somebody to go across country, somebody pays for that.
Yeah.
Always. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether you're corporate America or the Navy or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. I don't ask no questions. So, next call I get, Sydney hit me up. Rod, BET hit you up? All right, man, we about to do this. Yeah, Sid, man, I'm excited, man. They hit me up, man. It sound cool. But they did say that they wasn't covering no travel or nothing for my family to relocate. What? They not doing what? Man, let me call you back. Click. 5 minutes later. Hey, Rod. Yeah, Sydney, man. Hey, dog, is 20 grand enough to move your family? I can move my family for $3,500. So I had to move immediately. I personally left. I had to leave. I left my family. My wife is pregnant.
Wow.
I had to leave. I moved to Atlanta, stayed with my boy on his couch out in Douglasville, you know, as we went into production. Mind you, I don't know what my job is going to be.
You just said, come on.
I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Like, I think I'm the co-host,
uh-huh.
but I don't know.
Yeah.
I was a co-host on the radio,
mm-hmm.
but there's other people. Mo call me, hey, get Akintunde on the line right now. I want Ak to be involved in this. So I don't know if get Tone X on the line. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. So I get there, and they trying to figure out the stage. You know, we're going to put Rodney here. They didn't want to call me the co-host.
Who didn't, the producers or
BET.
Huh.
They didn't want to say that I was the Andy Richter to her, you know, her Conan O'Brien. They didn't want to call it anything, you know. And nothing against BET, you know. BET is a small network, and every dollar counts. Mm-hmm. So you know, if they call you something, they got to pay you
at that level,
at that rate.
Mm-hmm.
You like, even as a writer on the show, I was one of the writers on the show as well. We were creative consultants, mm-hmm. when writers. Mm-hmm. Somebody call you a writer, they got to pay you as a writer. which is a whole nother animal. Mm-hmm. Then you got the union. You got a lot of things that come into play when you are, you know, titles are very important.
Yeah.
Like, black people a lot of time don't understand how important a title is. You know, while I'm doing the job, just give my money. No. If they don't, give me the ding, ding. If they don't get your title right, that could cost you money down the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we doing the show, man. We start producing the show. I did 300 episodes. Well, I think I did 299. I took one day off. Mm-hmm. I did 300 episodes in 2 years, 150 episodes a season. It's one of the best things that ever happened to me. I mean, it's the reason a lot of people know me right now. Mm-hmm. If I could do anything over, if the show would have went one more season, mm-hmm. that would have been it. You know how the one that thing like take you to the choo.
Yeah,
I was just so I. It's like somebody pulled a slingshot back and then let it go back real slow. like if you let it go,
yeah.
The next season would, and we had actually got picked up for a third season, and so they had, you know, there was some between BT's team and Monique's team. There was some turmoil, and the show kind of ended abruptly. The show,
yes, it did end
actually abruptly. Was never canceled. Mm. Like there is no, you can look all over Google Monique show. There's never been nobody ever said anything about the show but me. I'm the only person that did an interview or did it. Monique talked about it maybe 2 years later in her stand up, mm-hmm. but I'm the only one because what I was told is that we were on indefinite hiatus.
And the show was going well. It was going well.
The show was going great.
I came to a couple of shows.
I mean, the live taping was live in the studio was like, it's like y'all. It's like play date. Yeah. We was wild out every day.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So
it was a good time. So with that ending, mm-hmm. did you have to reinvent yourself? Or you just had to go back? Because from your story, it doesn't sound like it, but did you have to reinvent yourself go back to something else?
I had to just be myself.
Mm.
I mean, you know, what happens is, you know, once you go into service for someone else, and so, like, my time at the Monique show, I looked at myself as being in service of Monique at that point in my career. I was mm-hmm. helping her. I made sure her voice was clear. You know, I was her voice in the writer's room. You know, a lot of stuff like that. So, when the show ended, I mean, it was just time for me to go back to doing what I did.
Mm.
And don't get me wrong, we didn't sever our relationship. I mean, we still worked together for 2 or 3 years after that.
Got it.
And I probably made more money as a result of my relationship with Monique than any other relationship. And I work with everybody. I work with Sed, Steve, Sed the Entertainer, Steve Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
Just dropping names.
Sed drop them again. Steve, go ahead. Just Sed, drop another one
Steve,
on.
George Lopez. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I work with some really great comics, but I made more money with Monique because she was, and not to take away from any of those guys, but with men, there's always a quiet competition.
It sounds like she was a champion for you a little bit.
Like, oh, absolutely. Like our first show together, right? First mm-hmm. comedy show. She said, Rodney, I want you to do this gig with me. It's in New York, New Jersey or something. And, you know, you should get like $5,000 for this. At this point, I had never touched $5,000. From a comedy show,
mm-hmm.
I was like, Mo, I don't even know how to ask for $5,000. She said, just ask them for it, fool. I was like, all right. So the promoter called me, yo, dog, I need $5,000, blah, blah. He's like, what? He said, I can get somebody here to do it for $500. Mm-hmm. I said, well, me and Monique talked, and that's what the deal is. So he's like, well, let's get on the phone. I'm like, all right. Hey, Shook, what's up? Hey, Mo, this is a blah, blah, ex-promoter, da-da-da-da-da. Hey, I don't know about this $5,000, man. I mean, the dude funny, but, man, come on, Mo. Now you going to mess this deal up over $5,000? She said, oh, no, Sugar. You going to mess this deal up over $5,000. All right, I see y'all when y'all get here. Boom.
Boom.
Mm. Boom. And so because of that, you know, that exposure, Mo not only exposed me, but she also showed me how to get the money,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, invaluable.
Yeah.
And even like I learned a lot of great lessons from her. Like when we while we was doing Monique, we had a tour. It was Monique's tour. I was hosting the tour. My man Tone X was on it. Maybe somebody else. I can't remember. But I had hooked up these people. You know, people always get at you when you are connected to a celebrity. People get at you to get to them.
Yeah.
Somebody had these little, like, tour booklets. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yo, man, we got these tour booklets. We sell them to you 10 cents a piece. You can sell them for 10, blah, blah, blah. You give us the images. I was like, oh, that's actually kind of dope. I go to Monique. I pitch to her. She's like, yeah. Mm. She's like, but I'm doing pictures, Rodney. You know, so that might take away from my pictures. But your time will come when you'll have to make these type of decisions for your tour. So, and she could have came to me like, yo, we ain't doing that.
Yeah.
But she always handled something on you. Like, she could have easily dropped, but she was right. Your time will come. Mm-hmm. And inevitably that time made itself available. And it's still coming. So,
okay.
Probably one of the most valuable relationships I have in comedy is my relationship with Monique.
Wow. So and it's the undertone is Rodney's overcoming some things. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
I was here, then I had to overcome. I was here, then I had to overcome. And yeah. It's you had to mentally stay down, whatever it was. So you got to just mentally stay down. Mm-hmm. So, but what's the drive? What drives you to persevere? What drives you to overcome?
The easy answer is my family. Mm. The more complex answer is being selfish.
Okay.
You know, I think in order to be successful at anything, you have to be singularly focused. To be singularly focused requires you kind of not to give a shit about other people.
That's real.
It's kind of...
We get the bell.
It's kind of like... It's whack, but it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Like I interviewed this dude one time.
That just breeds another question, but go ahead.
I interviewed this dude one time, and he's like, Rodney... He's like, you was willing to do things that I wasn't willing to do. He said, I wasn't willing to be broke. You know, you'll find that in your journey. Like, some people ain't willing to struggle. Mm-hmm. Well, struggle is what every great person, when they tell their story, they tell a story of struggle. From Tyler Perry to Oprah Winfrey, everybody.
Everybody.
So how is everybody struggle and you think you don't have to?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a luxury that we get, you know. And... what that struggle is kind of up to you. You can do things to kind of circumvent the struggle, but like I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I was telling her, I was like, look, you got to be willing to trust God. Okay, what do I mean when I say that? When I say trust God, it's not just quit your job.
Yeah.
People quit their job every day. I quit my job. God, I'm about to quit my job. But you don't trust them still.
Mm-hmm.
So you can stay, keep your job and trust God. But if you quit and you still don't trust God, you still got angst in your heart. You don't know if you should do it. If you, I don't know.
Kind of on the fence.
You're not trusting him. And if you're not trusting him, you're not going, your dreams are never going to manifest. And then you'll be set. You say, God, I quit my damn job. You told me to quit my job and you ain't never do shit. And God be like, stop being dumb.
It's funny because I was going to say just that there's a difference in persevering and sticking to something and then doing something just dumb that ain't even working. You don't have the talent to do that, but you sticking to it, that's kind of dumb. Or you didn't really have a plan for it, that's kind of dumb. It's different to persevere and to be dumb. So I'm glad you even said that. You said it, now you didn't have to say it.
Hilarious.
So I started off with saying perseverance could be taught.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question, just as perseverance, I think perseverance can be taught. And I'm not hearing that it can be taught. It sounded like this is it's kind of just an innate ability. It's something that you already have in you.
It's a great talking point. I mean, I understand the idea that perseverance can be taught.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I agree. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why. Because who's teaching?
Mm.
Most of the time you're alone. Every time I had to make an important decision, I was by myself. I tried to surround myself with people to help me. I will foresee certain things about to happen, and I'll keep people around me. But inevitably, when it was time to do the do, mm-hmm. I was alone. So I still had to stay. I still had to persevere in the absence of people. So who's teaching? So I think everybody has the will to be successful. Okay. Now, how far you're willing to go, like I think you even said at the top, like, you know, it was points when you were homeless. It's something in you that said there's something better than this, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's okay, mm-hmm. you know. So if somebody taught you that, they taught you that way before it ever happened.
Correct.
So which is possible. You know, my mother probably laid those, you know, I always use this analogy with my kids. Like when you look at Superman, you know, Superman's parents were killed, you know, when the planet exploded, mm-hmm. but his dad gave them crystals, mm-hmm. the crystals, those little jewels. So maybe you can be taught. Maybe those jewels, you know, that you got from a friend or from a parent, or hey, man, don't be a quitter. The one person that says that, or the old school comic that came to me after the show one day and said, "Hey, dog, why you got all that stuff in your pockets? It's distracting." Mm. Tony Royster told me that.
Oh yeah.
What the hell you doing with all that shit in your pockets?
It's distracting.
Distracting. Looking at your damn pockets bulging and shit. The hell. And so.
That's crazy.
You get all these little jewels, and the perseverance comes when it's time to use them.
My dad used to say, talking about people teaching you, my dad, he wouldn't let me quit anything. Like, right. You playing Monopoly, I quit. You can't do that.
We don't quit.
So you ain't going to quit. And he said, if I let you quit now, you'll be quitting for the rest of your life.
It gets easier. Because
it gets easier to quit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I heard him. But then I got older and
you might not use it till later
around
now.
Me. Yeah. And I had a partner who was a really good football player, but he was a hothead, mm-hmm. and he would quit.
Uncoachable.
And he now just he ended up quitting on life. Wow. He's been in and out of jail since we was 15. Mm-hmm. Went through some drug stints and things mm-hmm. of that nature. And I always look back at the moment.
Quit everything but being stupid.
Yeah, I understand that. We all went through dare together. I don't know why there's new junkies. But anyway, moving on.
but let me stop you right there. You said something very powerful. My dad.
Yeah.
My dad is so powerful. Like when I look at athletes on TV, wilding out, I feel like you can always trace it back to absence of a father. Mm. That's whether it's women or men. You know, you see people wilding out doing crazy stuff. It's always watch Bad Girls Club. Ain't a daddy on that mug.
Ain't a daddy nowhere.
Because somebody got to hold you accountable when you're a small person, when you're in your formative years. Mm-hmm. If nobody holds you accountable, then you end up in a situation and you're like, yo, I don't know my way. And don't get me wrong, you can still find your way. Like I think LeBron James, who I think is a great example of this. You look early in his career, he was trying to find his way. Well, LeBron shouldn't have left Cleveland. He shouldn't have grandstand maybe the way that people thought he should. But he was learning. Mm-hmm. I think this guy's 20-something years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got LeBron just turned 30.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been looking at him since he was 17, 16. Yeah. So you feel like he's been a man a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, physically, he looked like a man, but he was a boy.
Yeah.
And so when he decided to go to Miami, that was a huge decision. And he didn't have something that Michael Jordan had. What did Michael Jordan have?
His dad.
His father.
Chill out.
He always had a reference point, somebody he respected, mm-hmm. somebody he could go to. LeBron had to tell his mom to sit her ass down during a game.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, he did.
So you can only imagine how tumultuous his household was. Mm-hmm. Like, my children will have a better existence than I will because they have me, right? Yeah. So it's not that dads are so great and moms aren't great. It's balance.
Balance, yeah.
Children need balance. You need to go, dads do things. Like, I was grown before I found out you didn't have to make arrangements on the bill. I was grown. My mom only made arrangements. She still try to do it sometimes. Like, mama, just pay the bill. You got the money.
Mm-hmm.
But that's man shit.
Yeah.
You know?
I ain't said it. I was grown.
I was an adult. I was like, man, I'm not making it. I got to pay the bill again next month.
Yeah.
If I don't pay it, I still got to pay it again. Yeah. Now it's bigger.
It's going to load up on you.
It's going to load up on you. So, and what if I don't have the money next month?
And you really stuck next month.
Nah, no lights.
So going back to the perseverance situation, no lights. So as if we saying that perseverance may or may not can be mm-hmm. taught, I think you also, I believe people can be taught to aim low. They can be taught to aim low, to get low.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
People can be taught that. And I see that. I've seen that before where it's a generational effect of people mm-hmm. saying, well, you know, I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I'm probably going to say that every time I'm on the show. It's always a reference from that. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. And Richmond is East Coast city, medium-sized city. But the mentality. No doubt. The mentality is that you can't get out. The mentality is that you can't succeed from within Richmond.
Right.
But it's a seed in some people's mind that they really believe that. When I came down here, when I moved down here, and there were kids saying, I'm going to college, I'm going to Auburn, I'm going to Clemson, I'm going to these other schools that's in the South, that's Southern, predominantly white schools, those were TV schools to me. I didn't believe you could go to them schools.
Right.
Wow. Real talk. Like, but that's because, part of that is because there's a bunch of schools in Virginia. But still, to me, they were basketball or football schools, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Nobody really said to me, like, you know that you could go to Duke, right? You know you would go to UNC, right?
Right.
I ain't fly to them schools, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I went to a great school, but I just know that was just part of a mentality
mm-hmm.
that is taught. When also being down here, you see people driving different vehicles, kids driving different vehicles. Now, I give a shit about a car. Never have. But the mentality that, you know what, I got to get a Cadillac or I got to get a Nissan or whatever was the limit. And nobody ever said that, you know what, you could have got a Mercedes for your first car. I never said I could do that.
Right.
Nobody even thought like that, you know. Wow. Again, so I'm saying that to say that to be taught to aim a little lower, you could be taught that way.
Agreed.
I think it can be broken, but you also can be taught to aim much, much lower. And I think it's up to us that once you get enlightened mm-hmm. to kind of go back and teach that, you know what, you can get a passport today. I know so many people, grown people, don't have a passport.
Right.
You know, and like, you know, the office is downtown, right? You know, it ain't gonna cost you $200.
Not even. Yeah. Post office. Yeah.
You could go down there. You know, you take your passport picture at Rite Aid. You know that, right? So
you can take it on your phone.
True. Honest. Word.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You don't even got to pay the $8. You can just go take it on your phone.
You got to get an app that's $2.99.
Oh, got it. Somebody got to make money, right? Somebody got to make money. But what is your take on that? How do you feel that somebody that people can be taught to aim lower?
I mean, on a broader spectrum, I mean, as African American, I think that's part of our plight.
Mm.
You know, I think what you characterize in Richmond is true of blacks everywhere. Mm. It's part, you know, you can attribute it on some level to slavery. You can attribute it on some level to, you know, if you look at us as coming from Africa,
mm-hmm.
you know, Africa itself is kind of a segmented country,
mm-hmm.
of a set of countries. You know, I mean, it's like thousands of different dialects of, you know, hundreds of different languages, you know, inside of Africa. Mm-hmm. These are all people that look alike, but they don't even speak the same languages.
Mm-hmm.
So inherently in Africans, there is a disjointed nature, right? So I think that those of us that are African Americans, we are products of our environment. So, and that's what I think you're saying ultimately.
Yeah.
So at some point you don't get to blame your parents. At some point you don't get to, like, I mean, it's in the Bible. I mean, when a child becomes adult or becomes a man, he can no longer blame his plight on his father or his mother.
Mm-hmm.
So that's true of us too as people. You know, it's just so far you can blame slavery.
Yeah.
You know, now, even though it does affect you, there is post-traumatic stress. There is PTSD associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you look at, you familiar with Black Wall Street?
Yep.
Tulsa, Oklahoma. Maybe, even though this is 200 years ago, maybe that's affecting black business to this day. Because you had a bustling community that they conducted an aerial attack. They literally dropped bombs on these people in America, on American soil. It's never happened in history. But we're asked to forget about our Holocaust.
All the time. We have to forget about a lot of stuff.
But you know.
Yeah.
You know,
but it, to that point, that you're right. At some point, and I've said this before, at some point you got to figure out how to overcome those things. You know, you
say, individually and collectively.
You can't blame everybody else. We're gonna come to an end. But I did want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
That's related to more to you than the actual topic. But what do you want to be remembered for professionally? Like, how do you want to be remembered?
That's a great question. What do I want to be remembered for?
Or personally, it don't have to be professional. I mean, it can be personally.
That would have been an easier question years ago. I just want to be remembered as one of the funniest comedians ever to walk the earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of bigger than that now. That's become kind of a shallow wish.
Mm-hmm.
Last September 30th of 2016, I had a stroke. Mm-hmm. So that allowed me to put life in a different perspective. When you go to the edge of life and look over the cliff and you realize that every step is valid.
Mm-hmm.
So if people can remember one of my steps, that's a win.
Mm.
You know, if when I'm dead and gone,
ding,
people can stop and go, man, that dude was funny. You know, that's a good day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good day. So do I need to be the greatest comic that ever walked the earth? Not really. Do life is really, you know, and this is a current revelation for me. Life is not about where you're going. It's about the next step.
Mm.
One step. If you can make one step toward your goal every day, you're successful. You're winning.
Mm. Wow. Dang. That's enough right there. That's so. And you said it. You mentioned the stroke, and I knew about the stroke, and that's why I wanted to have a show with you about perseverance. Because you, man, I heard about the stroke. Somebody let me know, and I hit Madeline about it. And then, but you were like on stage. It seemed like you was on stage like a month later. It was like Roddy Perry show, comeback show. I'm like, yo.
I thought this dude was down.
Is he supposed to be doing this?
First of all, I went back on stage way too soon.
Yeah.
I'm very strong now. I'm still not 100%. I'm like 95% right now of what I could be.
Mm-hmm.
And not even what I was, because in retrospect, just before the stroke, I was probably, you know, I was weak. I was functioning. I was operating. But I wasn't operating on optimal level.
Mm-hmm.
Self-diagnosing myself, I thought I was just tired, you know. But I was sick, and I didn't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my chest, I was having chest pains. You know, I was probably, I got lucky and had a stroke. I was probably, you know, a day from a heart attack.
Mm.
Really.
Mm.
And so, when you have something like that, you know, life-changing happens. So you have a stroke, you land in the hospital, you lost the use of the left side of your body. I can't walk, I can't grab, and I'm talking to one of my buddies on the phone, and he's telling me he's got this deal about to go down to BET, man, he got a show about to crack, blah, blah. And he's like, man, this shit ain't gonna happen, man, blah, blah. I said, hold on, dog. I'm trying to walk. I'm trying to walk. Like, God has a way of breaking your life down to its lowest denominator. Like you can look at a fraction. You can look at a fraction, 1 million over half a million. Mm-hmm. That's still 2/1. You know what I'm saying? So, yep. So you got to break it down to its most common denominator. Mm-hmm. So to break life down to its most common, it's a single step. If you can make the single step, again, you can make it. And my analogy I use now, when I was in the hospital, first of all, me and my brother, my blood brother, we were estranged. We wasn't dealing with each other. He wasn't talking to me. I wasn't talking to him. Mm-hmm. And the stroke happened in Denver where he lives. And this dude was there for me every single day. And as I was getting on my feet and I was learning to walk again, I was like, Ryan, man, I want to run, man. And you talk, little fat dude, I wasn't running nowhere.
Yeah.
I said, I want to run. He said, man, we run next week. We run next week. And that's my mantra now. We run next week. Everybody want to be further than what they are.
Mm-hmm.
You can run next week. Just take the step today.
Oh, man. Ding. Ding. I was going to go into my pop's stroke and all that, but I want to leave right there, man, because...
How is he?
He's great, man, but... Yeah.
Did he get all his skills back, his motor skills?
It affected his middle brain little, mentally. Mm. So
memory?
So he the little things, he couldn't remember how to write his name and tie his shoe and stuff like that. It took a couple
that's
of
motor
years.
Motor skills, yeah, you got to work that. Yeah.
It took a couple of years. I mean, he's never going to be 100%, but he's back. He didn't lose. He can walk. He can move his arms and stuff like that. Yeah. So he can drive. Yeah. He can communicate. Yeah, he just – my dad is he's a guy in the center of the room. That's where I get it from. He can talk to anybody. My dad's a superhero to me. You know what I'm saying? Because my dad could talk to the CEO or the trash, the lowest guy in the room. Exactly. You know what I mean? Not the trash guy, but the lowest guy in the room or the guy that's down and out, sit there and talk to the homeless guy. You know?
Exactly.
That's my – and I was like, man, that's a superpower. He can talk – he can find something and talk to anybody.
Right.
But he's the ultimate story. I can get into that. We just ran a little long. I can get into him overcoming. But what I want to end with is that – you said who's teaching, and you just mentioned a teaching moment for you just in life. Life taught you. It's like, man, you know what? That's all that down there is crazy. Let me take this one step.
Yeah.
And so the beginning question is, the beginning statement was that perseverance can be taught. And I don't think we proved that it can be taught, but I think it's a little bit of, it can be taught, but also it can be, you're learning through life.
You're constantly learning.
You're learning through life, and you got to find it inside of you. I think perseverance can be found inside of you. It's not something somebody can actually give you.
So it's already there.
It's there.
It's already there. And so the question is, what you need taught is how to tap into it.
How to tap into it. There it is, man. That's it, man. Again, just running the point with Jason Carey. This is my man Rodney Perry. Well, tell him how
that
mean
I'm a power forward.
How
you
can
got
they
the
get
point,
to
man?
Social
get
media?
The ball up, Jay. Hey, social media. All my social media is Rodney Perry. The website rodneyperry.com. Instagram, I think it's Rodney Perry Live.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm all over that stuff, man. Just go to the website. You can find me.
Follow me, Jason804. Make sure you visit ATLPN.com, man. This is ATL Podcast Network. Jason Carey running the point, man.
We Richmond!
You already know.
Good stuff, man.
Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
Running the point with Jason Carey on ATL Podcast Network, the intelligent podcast.